You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Remember a time when we couldn't use the word racism. As a matter of fact, they would accuse us of playing the race card if we talked about racism. Mm-hmm. But I think now we have an opportunity for change. And for those who are resisting it, we're going to run right over them.
July the 14th, 2020. The direct statement and warning from California Congresswoman Maxine Waters. We're going to run right over you if you don't accept that there's systemic racism and we don't see the nation moving fast enough supporting that issue and Black Lives Matter. And, of course, Congresswoman Waters also claims President Trump and his supporters, that's you, many of you. I do have some Biden supporters listening, I know that, and I have some who probably haven't decided what they're doing yet. I don't know how you can be undecided. I really don't. But what she says is Trump and his supporters, which would include you if you're going to vote for Trump, you really want an all-white America, don't you? So you black Trump supporters out there, you really want an all-white America, right? Oh, and also she insists that Trump has no regard for black Americans. No regard for black Americans. Do you remember the name Alice Marie Johnson? 22 years in prison on a nonviolent crime. Did President Obama set her free? Nope. Which president set her free? Donald Trump. Plus, Trump pushed for, not Obama, but Trump pushed for and got a justice reform bill, which set some 3,000 inmates free who'd been jailed with onerous sentences for crack cocaine possession. Not selling, just possessing. And most of them, black. Or other minorities. But if you listen to the libs like Congresswoman Waters, Trump has no regard for black Americans and he wants an all-white America. Liberals also claiming Trump's racist attitude is contributing to systemic racism. And defending BLM is the thing you should be doing. Thomas Sowell, a black conservative economist, says the term, just the term, systemic racism, which is central to Black Lives Matter, he says it has no meaning. No meaning. We're going to get into more details on the Black Lives Matter issue again. You cannot ignore it. It's in our face every day, one way or the other. Whether you support it or you think you're supporting what you believe it is, or you're supporting what you know it really is, or you're supporting what it hopes it does to America. And if you're supporting it even when we have killings in minority neighborhoods and there's never been an effort by Black Lives Matter to hold rallies in those neighborhoods after innocent children shot down. Don Lemon Fruitcake the other night on CNN had Terry Crews, former football player, African-American, and he's saying, look, Black Lives Matter should be in these neighborhoods helping out. And Don Lemon said, no. Black Lives Matter was founded to deal with police violence only, police shooting blacks only. That was the only reason. Well, then why is it called Black Lives Matter? Why doesn't it say black lives shot by police matter? Because Black Lives Matter, I would think, would include all black lives. I would think. But no, if you have your one-year-old shot down in your neighborhood by guns handled by thugs, no, if the police weren't involved, we just don't care. Governor Cuomo says Trump's handling of COVID-19 is worse than Nixon with Watergate. Well, I hear you. I can hear you already saying, what? How does he make that comparison? Well, I'm going to let Governor Cuomo explain it directly. And also, I don't know how to tell you this, but in Portland again, if you have any relatives in that area, they maybe already communicated to you. Once again in Portland last night, another night of rioting outside the city police union headquarters. They refused to disperse, so police had to use tear gas and other issues, impact weapons, to leave now. Items thrown at police officers included paint, ball bearings, glass bottles, all those are criminal acts. They want another Seattle in Portland. We also have a guest coming on board today to tell us about this Iran nuclear facilities that suddenly are having these explosions. Iran says it's all an accident. Others are saying, no, Israel. Israel's behind it. The Mossad at work. You want to hear what this expert says? That's coming up. And lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in, assess the situation at a very reasonable cost, and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. It's been a
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Trump's COVID scandal makes what Nixon did at Watergate look innocent. Nobody died in the Watergate scandal. Thousands of people are going to die in this COVID scandal. And that is all the difference in the world.
New York Governor Cuomo saying that COVID-19 is handled by Trump makes what Nixon did at Watergate look innocent. No, it does not make Nixon look innocent. There's no connection. I mean, you talk about apples and oranges. My God, these are apples and Volkswagens. They're not even a fruit. He just throws them in there. You know why? Why? Well, because Nixon, a Republican, and that was a stain upon the Republicans in general, although, of course, they were rushing to impeach him and get him out of office before he resigned anyway. No, there's no comparison, but you don't need a comparison if you're liberal. You just kind of throw it against the wall, see if it sticks. And for the mainstream media, it doesn't just stick. It becomes something to feast on, to recycle, to keep putting that out there and reminding everybody, Trump is as bad as Nixon. There is no comparison to Watergate and Trump and COVID-19 cases the way he's handled the situation. None. But let's not let the facts interfere with a good lie, a good narrative for the left. And here was Cuomo also saying, this is during his news conference he had yesterday, he said the federal government, quote, has been denying the reality of the situation from the beginning. It doesn't exist. It's going to go away. By Easter, we'll reopen. When it gets warm, it will go away like it's a miracle. It didn't go away. There was no miracle. You denied reality. This is their political agenda over public health policy. This is what this is. When he says the federal government, he's obviously referring to Donald Trump. And yes, Trump is saying, you know, I hope it'll go away soon. Hopefully by Easter we can... It's hopes. Hopes in what you'd like to see, which we are all in favor of that. And Cuomo, weren't you in favor of that? Were you not hoping that maybe it would really go away? We're not saying it did. Never acted like it did. Trump continued, even against some governors who were opening early. Remember, he said, I think you ought to wait. Shouldn't do it now, but you're the governor of your state. You make that determination. Letting governors make their decisions. Texas, of course, one of those that went ahead and reopened fully, as has Florida, North Carolina, and so forth. And yeah, there have been a spike in numbers in Florida and Texas in particular, more recently in days. And Governor Abbott of Texas, who originally said, I do not want to mandate folks wear a mask, later had come up and say, I am mandating you wear a mask if you're out in public. And they had to shut down the bars again. And in Florida, doing the same thing. And, of course, the bar owners are claiming discrimination. See, if you serve food, if your bill at the end of the night on your tally from the register shows 51% of the revenue came from food, then you can stay open. If it's more than that, or less than that, I should say, even 50% food, 50% liquor, you know, you had to shut down. So bar owners are complaining. But Governor Abbott making that decision, and you've got sheriffs in Texas say we're not going to enforce it. Because a lot of folks feel like sometimes they've been given the wrong stories, the wrong timing, being directed, told this, told that. And they've gotten to the point where they just kind of look at everyone with just a little squinted eye and say, yeah, really? Really? And of course, Governor Cuomo now wants to stand at the heap. At the top and say, look what we've done in New York. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. But again, I want to remind you what Trump did to help New York when they were facing, they thought, a mess that we were not going to have enough PPE, personal protection equipment, even for hospitals, for our citizens at all. We were not going to have beds, enough beds. We were not going to have enough equipment, pieces that we would need, ventilators. Trump got all of that sent into them and, in fact, deployed one of the U.S. Navy hospital ships, the USNS Comfort, to take up position in New York Harbor, adjacent to New York City, so it could be used for overflow of either COVID patients or other patients. And the other, the USNS Mercy, which is based on the West Coast, was then sent off to the edge of L.A., the idea was, and Cuomo said, reference to Comfort coming in, this is great. It has about 1,000 rooms. It has operating rooms. And he was expecting they're going to need more than 50,000 new hospital beds, more than 30,000 new intensive care units. He says an extraordinary step, obviously. It's literally a floating hospital. In other words, praising Trump for doing that. But how quickly we forget. Or how quickly we realize, you know, we still have an election on the horizon. You can't make Trump look good. You got to find a way to get around that. And I praised Trump, Cuomo at that time for actually defending Trump and saying, look what he's doing. He's helping us. And so did the L.A. governor and L.A. mayor doing the same thing. They all praised Trump. And yes, they're having to shut down again in L.A. They've had an increase in cases again. We're going to see increases. We have understood that from the beginning that we began more testing. That's just going to be a natural component. The more testing you do, the more cases of COVID-19 you're going to find. The CDC has already estimated 10%, maybe more, 15%, 20% of the nation might have COVID-19. They haven't been tested. You're asymptomatic. You don't have any feelings. Nothing's changing. Your health seems fine, but you're carrying it, and you come in contact with someone who might be vulnerable, their immune system is down, you might end up giving it to them even though you didn't even know you had COVID-19. And of course, if you are tested and they find that you have it, then you're supposed to self-quarantine for 14 days. And Governor Cuomo now is again putting a ban on, as in New Jersey, or they're doing the same thing, on flights from certain states that they think are having a high risk at this point If you come in on a flight from Texas, they're going to give you a quarantine notice that you must go to a room, a hotel room, whatever you're going to, and stay there for 14 days. Well, a lot of business people are realizing, I'm supposed to be here doing meetings. I can't do that. Might as well go back home. And, of course, the restaurant's still not open in New York City. But as we pointed out yesterday, New York had zero fatalities the other day. New York City, zero fatalities in a 48-hour period. And Governor Cuomo, of course, is praising the New York numbers. Just listen to this.
You look at the facts. The facts clearly demonstrate Trump was wrong from day one. And New Yorkers have been right from day one. There's no argument. There's nothing to tweet about. The facts are in. The numbers are in. Look at the number of bodies. Look at the infection rate. New York's numbers have declined while the nation is going up.
That one 24-hour period, I think I said 48 a moment ago, that one 24-hour period where they had no COVID-19 deaths was just that one 24-hour period. I've been looking. I haven't seen any new numbers out of New York. I'm sure they probably have had some more. But there's another question going on here. I mean, first of all, you got Cuomo wanting to, hey, look, we got a zero. Look at what's happening in Texas and Florida. He didn't mention California. That's a blue state, so he doesn't want to do that. But that's just one day of reporting. But here's the other part of the issue, and we have known this many times. Deaths are being recorded as COVID-19 because they had COVID-19 when they died. They did not have COVID-19 causing the death, but maybe contributing if they were elderly. If they were elderly or they had some vulnerable issues with reference to their heart or their breathing or other issues, and then they caught COVID-19, they just kind of decided to lump it all together because COVID-19 took them down. But what, they've gotten to the point where they were throwing COVID-19 on anything and everything. If you die in a car wreck and you come in and they run a test on you and they find out you have COVID-19, you died of COVID-19. COVID-19 didn't run down the highway and cross the median and run right through your driver's door killing you. But when you get there and they test you and find you had COVID-19, they're listing you as a COVID-19 death in many cases. I would guarantee you they're doing that. And I'm waiting for a full accounting at some point where they're going to say, all these numbers we're reporting dead. I think, what are we now, at 130,000? Am I over-exaggerating? I don't remember the numbers now. I know 3.3 million cases or more confirmed. But whatever they're listing, I would guarantee you many of those are not dead because of COVID-19, but when they died, they had COVID-19. You see the difference, and they know the difference. But the more deaths they can lay at the COVID-19 doorstep is also at the doorstep of President Trump. That's what they're trying to do. As he said, New Yorkers had it right from the beginning. Trump had everything wrong. No, that's not true. Not true. Yesterday we were running a bite from Nancy Pelosi out in Chinatown, you know, pointing out that, come on to Chinatown, there's no big deal, come on in. That was, what, Feb 24 that she was doing that? While we were still seeing this thing begin to ratchet up and speed up across the nation. And then Trump had stopped flights out of China directly if he could. And then later from Europe, from areas where folks were going into Europe and then trying to come in. And, of course, don't forget, and there's something Cuomo did not want to mention when he's praising the New York numbers and saying New Yorkers had it right in the beginning, Trump didn't. He is not dealing with the nursing home deaths. Remember, he issued an order March 25 that required nursing homes to accept coronavirus patients who are medically stable without testing them. And then later he claimed, the deaths were caused by infected staff members who spread the virus. Well, you know, that didn't set well with the nursing home facility operators or their staff. 80% of the 310 nursing homes in New York State took coronavirus patients, already had cases before Cuomo issued his order. But then he did not say you could get them out of your nursing home and send the hospital. If you send the hospital couldn't handle them, they sent them back. You had to take them in the nursing home. And he later said, well, the nursing homes could have said, no, we're not going to take them back. That's not what your order said. Your order said you had to take them. Cuomo, of course, is blaming all this as dirty politics. He did rescind his order May 10th. He said it was, quote, a political conspiracy that the deaths in nursing homes were preventable. Well, stop me right here. Are you telling me that if you send COVID-19 patients into nursing homes and more die in that nursing home, that there's no correlation, and yet you want to compare Nixon and Watergate to Trump's handling of COVID-19? As I said, that's the difference between apples and Volkswagens. You want apples and oranges, you come at least closer with that with Cuomo, but it is apples and apples on Cuomo, but he does not want to admit it. We're at a point now we also need to know, when can we open the schools? And there's a virologist from Hong Kong claiming there's been a coronavirus cover-up and we need to do something immediately. We're going to take a look at both of those stories, especially regarding reopening schools, which I know is critical to many of you listening. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 30 children under the age of 15 have died from COVID-19. 15. I cannot imagine that how parents are still dealing with that. 15. In a typical year, 190 children die of the flu. And, of course, in New York or in Chicago and other such places, the kids are more likely to be gunned down and shot to death than have to die from COVID-19. Only 2 children under the age of 18 have died in Chicago of COVID-19. Only 2. Far fewer than those killed in shootings in recent weekends, right? In New York City, 0.03% of children under age 18 have even been hospitalized for COVID. 7.5 in 1 million have died. That's a statistical number. That number is an actual child, so don't forget that. And the Wall Street Journal editorial board has made this clear. Reopening schools, the harm of lost instruction outweighs any COVID-19 risk. In other words, they're saying reopen the schools. The Wall Street Journal editorial stating everything else about the coronavirus has become politicized in America, so why not a return to school as well? That's the depressing state of play as President Trump pushes schools to reopen. Democrats heed teachers' unions that demand more federal money and say we may not come back to school anyway. And, of course, the losers will still be on either side, the children. Wall Street Journal editorial statement, the evidence, scientific, health, economic, which everyone on the left says Trump ignores. The Wall Street Journal says the evidence, scientific, health, and economic, argues overwhelmingly for schools to open in the fall. Start with the relative immunity of young children to the disease. That should reassure parents. And as we're trying to get the nation back to work, they don't have anyone to take care of the kids, or they won't be earning enough at the job they now have to help pay for daycare. In the meantime, there's a Hong Kong virologist who fled to the U.S. earlier this year. She appeared last night on Bill Hemmer Reports in an exclusive interview. And she said, this is a huge pandemic we've seen in the world. It's more than anything we've known in human history. So the timing is very, very important. If we could stop it early, we can save lives. She's saying the greatest in human history. We talked to you the other day about the bubonic plague knocking out 50 million across Europe back in, what, the 1300s, something like that. I forgot the date, but I haven't seen that kind of number yet. But this is her statement, and she says she's a whistleblower and she fears for her life. Now, we do know what's happened to some in China who apparently were working on this, and then they would suddenly fall out of an open window in their lab. They did. They just fell out of the window. And in some cases, labs were shut down. This virologist from Hong Kong says, the Chinese government has been censoring my work, and I'm waiting to tell everyone I provided all the evidence now to your U.S. government. She said, we have to chase the true evidence, get the real evidence. This is key to stopping this pandemic. We don't have much time. That's a direct warning. We don't have much time. We're going to take a break when we come back. The Iran nuclear facilities that they have, that they're just trying to create nuclear power to make their country better, have been having a series of explosions. Iran says it's accidents. Others are saying it's Mossad. Stay tuned.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
As you know, we have previously had Fred Flights, the president, CEO of the Center for Security Policy, on the air. I've been having Fred on the air with me for about 5 years plus now. And I contacted Fred today, said, Fred, I want to know, you got anything you want to say about Iran and all these, quote, accidents happening at nuclear facilities and missile storage depots? He's saying, I want to give you a guy that we've got on the very front edge of that. That'd be David Wormser. David is an American, born in Switzerland, American foreign policy specialist. He has served as a Middle East advisor to former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney, Special Assistant John Bolton of the State Department, and other numerous things, including time in the U.S. Navy as an intelligence officer, the rank of Lieutenant Commander. David Wormser, welcome to Larry Connors USA. Glad to have you on board.
Well, it's an honor to be here.
Well, let's begin with these incidents we've been having. We had one of them back on June 26, I think, was the first at a petrochemical plant. There was a fire and explosion. It rocked downtown Iran. And after that event, we also had another one follow. And then over the last couple of days, we've had a couple at an uranium enrichment plant on July 2nd, I should say, and then others on July 3rd. And Iran keeps saying, it's just accidents. What is your thought?
Quite a string of accidents. And you covered it pretty well. I mean, there seem to be two types of targets, incidents, accidents, whatever they want to call them. One is sort of things that are connected to their military program, specifically their nuclear program or their missile program. And then the second category seems to be things that affect their large infrastructure and could be regime destabilizing type activities. And, you know, the interesting thing about the Iranians is they continue to insist a lot of these are accidents, but then they threaten retaliation for one of the accidents.
Well, who are they going to retaliate against, gremlins?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, you know, they're hard to find.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess they will. No, the specifically the one on July 2nd, if you look at the satellite imagery, July 2nd was, as you pointed out, it was the Natanz nuclear enrichment plant, and it is where they were assembling the next generation centrifuges that would vastly accelerate their ability to produce enough uranium to build a bomb.
Now, wait a minute, David Worm. Just wait a moment here. They insist that they're only doing this to have nuclear power to take their country out of the Stone Age, not make nuclear weapons.
Yeah, except we keep catching them having a nuclear weapons design program. So, you know, I mean, it's really pesky facts are sometimes. But, you know, right off the bat, they admit to something that is no longer viable. They admit to enriching now over 4.5% uranium. We only need 3.67% for a nuclear plant. In fact, you can't put a 4.5% enrichment into a nuclear plant. So they're already enriching to a point that makes no sense in terms of the nuclear program that they claim to be legitimate. But that, you know, beyond that, we've caught them over and over again. And then you had that very unfortunate incident for the Iranians 2 years ago where Israeli commandos secretly in the night spirited away their entire nuclear archive. And it wound up in Israel. And the Israelis very quickly pointed out how extensive their nuclear weapons program had been and how many of the pieces of that program have just simply disappeared and have never been accounted for.
Has Israel shared those archives with U.S. and other intel agencies, to your knowledge?
Absolutely, they have.
Good.
Yes, not only with the U.S. intel, but they've even allowed civilians to access them as well.
I'm sorry, who, sir?
Civilians, non-government people have even accessed these archives. They've opened them up. I mean, they've fully exposed the program. But, you know, they've gone further. And they last year at the UN, the Prime Minister of Israel said, well, they still have a secret nuclear storage facility, and it's right here. And he showed it on the map. And then when the UN showed up 6 months later, it took them 6 months to get there, it was a completely empty building, but they took traces, you know, Geiger counters and so forth, they took traces of materials, and they found a lot of evidence of uranium had been there.
So here's the thing, David. I mean, they made it clear, actually, when Trump walked away from the treaty that got, it wasn't even a treaty, the agreement that got shoved down our throat by the Obama administration, which Iran never signed off on anyway. And they said, if you do that and you increase sanctions, we will escalate nuclear weapon production. They made a statement they were going to do that. So they haven't hidden their ambition as far as the public goes.
No. They never hid their ambition, but the only thing is they're lying about lying, which is...
that's a good way to put it.
They never came into compliance with that agreement. There were a couple things right off in that agreement they blew away. First, right off, was that they had to come clean about everything they had done before, which those archives showed was not the case. But then second, they've been bragging internally about how they cheated. Like they were supposed to fill the core of one of their reactors with concrete. And the head of their nuclear program a year ago was out there bragging about how they tricked everybody and only filled some feeder pipes and left the core intact. So it can be, you can take the pipes, switch them, and then it's back online.
You know, your remark a moment ago, they're lying about lying. I'm thinking, how would that go on a polygraph? That would blow that machine up entirely, wouldn't it? But we know, Israel obviously doesn't want that, but there are other actors in the Middle East that do not want Iran to have this, any kind of nuclear facility capability, and a nuclear weapon facility. So players outside Israel that would be involved, or at least certainly happy to see this kind of accident happening inside Iran?
Oh, yeah, the Saudis, UAE, there's a lot of people out there who really would be terrified of an Iranian nuclear capability. For that matter, I think there are even a lot of Iranians who are worried about it because they know what their government is like. and they know how irresponsible that government is. And they don't want to be involved in some apocalyptic struggle.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one of my next questions, because so many Iranians, they clearly would like to see a regime change, but they don't dare come out and say it. I mean, you lose your head pretty fast in that part of the world if you speak out against the Iran leadership, and especially Ayatollah.
Yes, absolutely. Look, we know that even though they lose their head very quickly for speaking out against the Ayatollahs, many do. Many are out there demonstrating all the time. Many are rioting. Many are constantly challenging the system there, and have been again and again, and especially in the last 2 years, they've been out there. From every evidence we have, the Iranian people have had it with their government. They're increasingly taking risks to say so and act on that. But, you know, when a government still has the will to kill, this government has the will to kill, they can kill thousands of people in a week if they need to.
When you look at Israel, would you say the Mossad be involved in carrying some of this out as well?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think what it is the Israelis also work with the Iranian opposition figures, so they're probably Iranians involved with the Israelis on this. I would imagine that anything Israel does on that level of sensitivity and scale would require and be obviously coordinated with the United States.
You're listening, David. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it's quite possible we might have been involved too. But I think it's primarily the sort of footprints left seem to me to indicate an Israeli operation with possible American buy-in. But
let's deal with this point. You said that we might have been involved. And again, you're listening to David Warren Pseries with the Center for Security Policy. He has a Ph.D. in international relations from Johns Hopkins University. And as I had mentioned earlier, he served as a Middle East advisor to former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. There's a piece written in January from The Intercept earlier this year that says the key architect of 2003 Iraq war, now a key architect of Trump-Iran policy, at that time is referring to you within the Bush administration in the beginning, and now that you've got that supposedly you're linked into Donald Trump. I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
I wish I were that powerful. My life would be a lot easier. you know, I mean, there were a lot of people involved with that. It didn't go quite the way I wanted it to go. It wasn't the way that we thought of it or conceived of it. It was one of those typical Washington committee products where, you know, they always used to say here that a camel is a horse designed by a committee in Washington.
Yeah, I hear that.
And that's kind of what happened in wars. When you design them that way, they're really bad, but you know, at the end of the day, there were very powerful people in the administration. I was not one of them.
Are you talking about which administration?
The Bush administration.
All right. So where are you with the Trump administration at this point?
Well, I was advising John Bolton, the NSC, and still have deep and friendly ties with everybody inside. I'm not now formally linked to them as I was a year ago. But I write stuff, and they listen to it. So, I still have quite a bit of access. But at this point, the best thing for me is, because I don't need to deal with it on a day-to-day. When you're inside government, the worst thing is you're answering the mail all the time. So you never have time to sit back and think big picture. And,
well, I know Fred's got to have you on board for Center for Security Policy now.
Yeah.
Listen, I appreciate
so that's what
your...
people like,
I appreciate your time, David. I'll obviously be reaching out to you in the future, and I appreciate your input and joining us today, sir, for the first time.
Thank you, and it's an honor.
You bet. We'll do it again. David Wormser, American Foreign Policy Specialist, and currently with the Center for Security Policy. I'd mentioned to you yesterday that the federal government was going to carry out an execution at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and then I had to tell you that, no, it's been stalled. Well, it did take place eventually. I want to tell you what happened, and again remind you what this guy convicted to death had done. That's coming up. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So yesterday at 3 o'clock, the federal government was going to carry out its first federal execution in almost two decades. Lethal injection for a man convicted of killing an Arkansas family in the 1990s. Supposed to go down 3 o'clock Central Time yesterday. They got delayed again because critics came forward and said the government's creating an unnecessary and manufactured urgency for political gain. And one of the lawyers for the guy said, it's shameful the government saw fit to carry this out during a pandemic, as if COVID-19 has anything to do with justice at that point. And then added, it's beyond shameful that the government in the end carried out this execution in haste. In haste? I just told you he's been on death row since 1990s. Now, one of his colleagues, apparently the reputed ringleader of the supremacist group he was in, did get a life sentence for the crime. But apparently this guy, Lee, I forgot his whole name because I just could care less about using name. But in this case, I want to give it Daniel Lewis Lee. 47 years of age. He was given the death sentence for the same crime. What had they done? In 1997, they killed a gun dealer and his wife and her 8-year-old daughter about 75 miles northwest of Little Rock. You know how they killed them? They used stun guns on the victims. Then sealed trash bags with duct tape on their heads to suffocate them, taped rocks to their bodies, and then dumped them on a nearby bayou. Oh, yeah, that sounds like a guy that should be set free, right? Well, of course, on the other side, I want to point out, I always try to give you a balance, relatives of those who were killed, one of them an 81-year-old woman, saying that they killed my granddaughter, but killing him's not going to bring her back. I understand that, ma'am. And I'm glad you have that kind of mercy because I don't. But either way, the execution yesterday got stopped. But prosecution continued to move forward with additional reports and claims and appeals to the Supreme Court. And today, in a 5-4 ruling, the court stepped in and allowed the execution to be carried out. And it was carried out at 8:07 a.m. Eastern Time. 7:07 Central Time, he was finally executed. But it was all in haste, right? The guy's been on death row since 1997, and now it's been rushed. Now, he claimed as he went to his death sentence, he said, I didn't do it. I made a lot of mistakes in my life, but I'm not a killer. You're killing an innocent man. I don't know details of the case, but I gather between one of the guys already sentenced to life that he probably rolled over and quickly named the other guy. I don't know what happened. But apparently, I'm sure, I hope anyway, they had more than just the other guy's word. I mean, I do not believe in executing anybody simply based on a witness or someone who's tattling on them. I want independent verification, DNA, and things of that nature. So supposedly, they had all of that. Now, there are two other federal executions scheduled for later this week, one remaining on hold in a separate legal claim. There have been two state executions in the U.S. since the pandemic forced shutdowns nationwide back in mid-March, one of those in Texas and one in Missouri. But again, this is the first federal execution since 2003. The Justice Department has continued to approve death penalty prosecutions, and federal courts have been sentencing defendants to death. Now, in 2014, following a botched state execution in Oklahoma, President Obama had directed the Justice Department to conduct a broad view of capital punishment and the issues surrounding lethal injection drugs, and so that put a halt to all of it at that point. But now, under President Trump, they're moving forward on the federal level as well. In 2004, states put to death 59 people. In 2019, 22 by states, 9 of those in Texas. And again, this is the first federal execution. I'm glad to see it happen. I'll make no bones about it. If you are against capital punishment, that's your opinion, and you're entitled to it, obviously. I'm all for it. No, don't try to tell me, well, what about abortion? You don't want to kill newborn babies. You don't want babies. That's right, because a baby is innocent of everything. This guy has obviously been convicted of a heinous crime. Taking an 8-year-old girl, putting a bag around her head, duct taping it, and putting rocks taped to her body and throwing her into a river. You don't deserve any mercy. Not from me. Maybe God will give you mercy, but in this case it didn't. Maybe God would deal with you now. Now I'm going to leave that to God because that's his judgment. Oh, and one other thing, these lethal injections, so concerned about the lethal injection. Do you know what they do on the lethal injection? One of the things they do, that I witnessed Missouri when they began their executions with George Tiny Mercer when they finally resumed after the Supreme Court lifted the stay originally. They put an antiseptic on the arm or leg where they're going to do the lethal injection, where they clean it so he won't get any infection. They clean the body, the part of the body where they're going to inject so he won't get an infection, and then they give him a deadly drug. That make any sense to you? Not to me. Coming up in the next hour, Hillary Clinton has a warning. She says Donald Trump might not accept the results if he loses. He's not going to willingly accept the public view and the public outcry and the votes. Hillary Clinton can make that claim? Oh, you got to hear that. Next hour.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.